You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
The world is a big place with a lot of wonderful things in it. The world also happens to be spherical, which can make getting to those things a challenge if you don't have many landmarks. This is the case when people are navigating by sea. For this reason, map projections, which take a sphere and attempt to flatten it onto a sheet, were born. So what is a map projection? Why are there so many? And why is Gallpeter's the worst? All this and more on this episode of Breaking Math, episode 64, What Projection Is This? I'm Sophia.
And I'm Meryl.
And you're listening to Breaking Math. So we're going to be talking about map projections today, but before we get started, we have a couple of plugs. Tensors are the mathematical objects used in Einstein's general theory of relativity. And now they're in poster form. We have a lovely 24-inch by 36-inch poster that we made about tensors, and it's available on facebook.com/breakingmathpodcast. Just click on shop. The posters are matte, full color, and make a perfect addition to any office. So for $15.15 plus $4.50 shipping and handling, a total of $19.65, you can get this poster for you or someone you know. So check it out at facebook.com/breakingmathpodcast when you click on store and see if it's right for you.
We're also on Patreon at patreon.com/breakingmath. You can go there if you want to support the show. Even a $1 donation makes a huge difference, and we'll send you a thank you message. With $1 or more, you can gain access to episodes slightly early and without ads. We also include the outlines we use to produce the show. We really appreciate your patronage at patreon.com/breakingmath. We've had a lot of $1 and $5 donations recently, and it has been a game changer.
We're on Twitter at breakingmathpod, on Facebook at facebook.com/breakingmathpodcast, and we have an interactive website at breakingmathpodcast.app, which has not been updated in like forever, but check it out.
Yeah, I'm actually still not on the website. That should probably change.
Oh yeah, yeah, that definitely should. I need to. It got changed to a new hosting platform that I have like not even delved into. But hopefully by the time the next episode goes out, we'll have that updated at least a little bit, because we have more than 3 episodes now, right? I am not selling the website. There's some cool applets on there. So why? I remember we were talking about episode ideas, and I remember this one kind of jumped out at us. Meryl, do you want to explain why map projections maybe are kind of fun?
So the thing about map projections is, at the end of the day, their topology is you're taking things from one surface and mapping them onto a two-dimensional coordinate plane. And if you ever take a class on manifolds, then that's entirely topology, is developing coordinate charts for whatever surface you're working with. The only difference here, though, is that instead of determining different coordinate charts for different regions of the Earth, in this case, we're taking the entire Earth and trying to put it onto a flat plane.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's topology.
Yeah, and I believe we talked about topology in episode 58, bringing curvy back, right?
Yeah, and probably even more beyond that, because talking about topology. It's the coolest thing ever.
Oh, yeah, it really is. I mean, we also talked about, didn't we do an episode on spheres or circles? Let me check.
Yes, yeah. We did.
Yeah, episode 52, a round on circles and spheres, which is a kind of a good companion to this episode for reasons we'll see. Oh, wait, so without further ado, map projections. So we have to ask the question, what is a map projection? And we have to recognize, first and foremost, that Earth is a sphere with...
Wait a minute. I thought the Earth was flat. But then if the Earth is flat, then what map projection actually is the Earth if it's already a 2D plane?
Well, if the Earth was a 2D plane, that would be called planar denialist projection. And it's a one-to-one angle-preserving, area-preserving, and shape-preserving map.
and bijective and bicontinuous.
And by Occam's razor, since it's the most pleasing map projection, it must be the shape of the Earth. But no, seriously, the Earth is a sphere. Okay, so we have to talk about, obviously, what a sphere is, right? So a sphere, at its most basic geometric definition, is a set of points equidistant from some central point, right?
Right, and the sphere that we're talking about, at least in terms of the Earth, is the two-sphere embedded in 3D space. And what that means is that we're talking about the set of all points in 3D space that are equidistant to a center, and we call it the two-sphere because we can use as little as two coordinates to represent it.
And the one that we use for the Earth are latitude and longitude, right?
Right, and in math terms, we usually use phi for latitude, which is the up and down, and theta for longitude, which is the right and left.
Latitude is 0 at the equator, negative 90 at the South Pole, and 90 at the North Pole, right?
Yes, and longitude, on the other hand, can go from anywhere between 0 degrees and 360 degrees, at which point you've looped all the way around the Earth.
Yeah, and where is longitude 0?
If I'm not mistaken, that's the prime meridian.
Yeah, also known as the IERS reference meridian, which is maintained by an awesome-sounding organization. What's it called?
The International Earth Rotation and Reference System Service.
Yep, it's always fun, you know, these people who maintain charts for, like, magnetic charts, declination charts, and things like that. If you happen to be working for any one of these organizations, you can send us your stories. We always want to hear about that kind of thing. Basically, it just goes through Greenwich, which is also UTC time 0. But yeah, so Meryl, why is latitude seemingly more concrete than longitude? Like, latitude, no matter where you are, seems to correspond to something, you know, more real to us versus longitude. But it's an illusion, correct?
Right, and I imagine that's simply just the nature of the Earth being a sphere with magnetic poles itself is like, because we have, like we've mentioned, 90 degrees, the North Pole, negative 90, the South Pole, and then we've got 0 degrees, the equator, is just right in between them. It's pretty easy to define.
Yeah, and obviously the Earth is spinning, so those two things are where, you know, our view of this comes from.
Wait, the Earth is both not flat and it's spinning now?
Yeah, and angels keep you on it, though. It's kind of nice.
I thought it was turtles.
No, the turtles hold up the Earth. Angels keep you on the Earth.
Got it.
You should have learned this in eighth grade science.
Must have been sick that day.
So a flat plane projection attempts to take this data and put it onto a flat piece of paper, right? Like we said during the intro.
Right, but as we're going to find out, that's not quite so easy to do. You can try it yourself by trying to take a piece of paper and cover a globe with it. You're not going to have that easy of a time.
Oh yeah, it'll crumple a bunch. And vice versa, if you take an orange peel and you try to flatten it onto a sheet of paper, you're going to have like basically infinite amount of cracks, right?
Right. There's actually mathematical terminology that we can use to describe this phenomenon. And so what we're talking about is that there isn't a bijective, bicontinuous map between a sphere and, say, a flat plane, like a rectangle. And this bijective, bicontinuous map is also called a homeomorphism, a term that you're going to see in topology and discussion of manifolds a lot.
Yeah, and a bijective, first of all, bijective just means that the map can go backwards and forwards, right? Like a shadow is not a bijective map of an object, right?
Yeah, so if we want to really get into the details, then a bijection is both an injective and surjective map, or one-to-one and onto. What it means is that everything that you input to this map has a distinct output, so no two inputs have the same output. And surjective means that every output has an input. So you go both ways, you're going to have distinct points mapped to other distinct points. It's one-to-one and onto, we like to call it.
So yeah, so example for in the field of our vision, right? It is onto because every light that appears, you know, bright enough to see will appear in our visual field, right? But if we're just talking about one eye here, which we are, something like a quarter, like, you know, 1 foot away versus like a big giant, like, trash can lid size quarter further away would appear identical, right?
Exactly.
And what is bicontinuity?
So bicontinuity is what it says on the tin is that this map is continuous both ways.
And by the way, when we say map here, we mean a mapping mathematically, not as in a map of the Earth, correct?
Right, and all that means that we're talking about taking a point in and getting a point out, not drawing something on a piece of paper like we'd see with a map.
Yeah, and I mean, it's called that because of maps, obviously, right? Because a map is a piece of paper is not, you know, the city that that it represents, correct?
Yeah, so the similarities are there.
This is why originally these are called mappings, but by now the term map in mathematics is so far removed from actual maps. And we can also describe why it's hard to flatten out using the theorema egregium, right?
Yes, and we actually talked about this on our episode on curvature, is that, so let's say that we just have a piece of paper that we're trying to wrap around a globe, right? Then, mm-hmm. So Sophia, what's the curvature of this piece of paper?
The local curvature of the piece of paper is zero.
Right. And so what about the curvature of the Earth then?
It's one over the radius, right?
Yeah. And so that's going to be a positive value. But needless to say, it's different from the curvature of the piece of paper. And so the piece of paper, no matter how you bend it, it's going to maintain that zero curvature. And as a result, you're not going to successfully wrap your piece of paper around the Earth.
Yeah, and you can see this really easily with a piece of pizza, right? You take a piece of pizza and you hold it by just the crust, and if it's one of those big, delicious slices of pizza, it'll curve downward, right?
Yeah, it'll just droop right down. But if you grab the pizza by the crust and you bend the crust, then that zero curvature line will go down the pizza, so it doesn't droop down anymore. It stays upright and makes it easier to eat.
And a big reason for this is because the curvature can be described as a product, right, of the coordinate curvatures in a way.
Exactly, the principal curvatures.
Yeah, and the principal curvature along the pizza being folded is positive with the pizza, but it has to be zero down the pizza, right? Because otherwise it would stretch, and pizza crust is bendy but is not stretchy.
Right. And we can also think of principal curvatures of the Earth in that no matter what axis you take along the Earth, it's going to curve inward because it's a sphere, and therefore it's going to have positive curvature because both of its principal curvatures are positive.
If you take a sphere, right, you try to flatten it out, you're gonna end up stretching some stuff. So what are some limits and constraints on what it's preserved and what is distorted?
Yeah, so there's some maps that are area preserving. So no matter what section of the Earth you take out, whether it's a country, whether it's a rectangular region or something like that, it's going to keep that area the same, but it's going to distort the shape, scale, or angle within.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
That region. And then so there's, for instance, angle preserving maps. So the shapes of everything will generally stay the same, but the area of, say, different countries will get stretched. And we'll see this in countries where area is closer to equal, more towards the equator, but then countries like Greenland that are way up north will get stretched to look way bigger than they actually are.
Yeah, and which is kind of fascinating because, like, the Mercator projection, which is the one that you're talking about with Greenland being the size of South America, even though it's about an eighth of the length of South America, is angle preserving, which means that if you look at really close up on the chart and you, like, draw an angle between, like, your house and a coffee shop and, like, you know, a pebble, the angle's going to be the same in real life as it will be, like, you know, on the surface of the Earth as it will be on their Mercator map. And it's kind of strange because it seems like the Mercator map, because it stretches out area so much, it seems strange that it would preserve angle. But that's just the nature of working with spheres, right?
Right. And for instance, with the Mercator, so yes, Greenland is big. It's, if I'm not mistaken, the largest island in the world. But the Mercator gives a misleading idea of just how big it really is.
If you go to xkcd.com/2489, there's a map which is equal area except for Greenland, which uses Mercator, which is kind of funny.
But those are always fun too.
Yeah, and one thing that kind of shows you how hard it is to look at a map and see kind of what's going on, right, is what is the closest state in the United States to Africa?
Believe it or not, it's Maine.
Yeah, which is strange because it seems so high up there, but it's also a lot closer to West Africa than, like, you know, even Florida.
Right. I feel like Florida would be the intuitive second choice, but no, it's Maine that's actually the closest. And that's the tricky thing about maps, is that you can't necessarily draw a straight line between two things on them and it actually be the path of shortest distance between them. We've even talked about what the actual shortest distance between two points on a sphere is, and it's an arc of the Great Circle, which we've talked about on probably any episode where we've brought up spheres.
Oh, yeah, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but, like, if you go, like, you know, a certain angle with respect to true north constantly, it's called a rhumb line, R-H-U-M-B, which is approximately the shortest distance when you're not sailing near the poles. But if you go on a course towards the poles like that, you actually end up in an infinite spiral really close to the pole. There are a few types of map projections with different properties. Some, like we said, preserve some properties and others preserve others.
Right. And so the first one we'll talk about then is a conformal map. And so this is actually conformal in the same way that you'd hear in, say, complex analysis, where what it does is that it preserves local angles. So if you have, you know, any two lines crossing on the sphere, then they're also going to cross at the same angle on your map itself. So one very famous example of a conformal map is the Mercator projection. Even though it's a classic, it's one of the ones we'll make fun of.
Oh yeah, because people misuse the heck out of it. And then you got equal area maps, and these preserve areas. Let's say that you have one country and it has twice the area of another country, right? On an equal area map, the mapped area will also be twice the other area, right?
Exactly. And not like Mercator, where Greenland is, you know, massive.
Oh, yeah. And then and so some examples of these are sinusoidal, which is, I think, the earliest equal area mapping. It kind of makes the Earth look like if you put your hands together with your thumbs touching and your pointer fingers touching and you spread them apart a little bit, it kind of looks like that. Mm-hmm. And also Goode's Homolocene, which kind of just looks like an unwrapped orange. It's kind of interesting. So we have plate Carrier, which is equidistant, or relative distance relationships between the poles and any two points that you're considering will remain constant, right?
Right. And so I actually just took a look at this projection. And so, yes, some of the things other than distance themselves, like shape, scale, and area, get distorted. But I do have to say, other than Antarctica being oddly massive, this map actually doesn't look too bad. Greenland doesn't look too big. America doesn't look too massive either. Africa looks about the size it should be, which is actually huge, it turns out. So this one's not bad.
There's also two-point projections that you can make between any two points, right? Chosen by a map maker. And if you do those, the closer you put these points together, the more distorted stuff far away from those points will be, right?
Right. So a mnemonic projection is a map projection that displays great circles on the sphere, which is the Earth, as straight lines. So what this actually gets us then is that a straight line segment on the map actually will be the geodesic, or the shortest point between those two endpoints, which is not usually the case on maps.
Yeah, which you're saying that that what amounts to a line on the surface of a sphere also amounts to a straight line on the projection, right?
Mm-hmm. And so there is a limitation of the mnemonic map projection, though, which is that you can't show more than 180 degrees on the map. So let's say we have a mnemonic projection at the North Pole, then it'll have great circles radiating outward from the North Pole, and it'll bring us towards the equator and show us the Northern Hemisphere. We could also have, for instance, something where we have a point that we chose on the equator, and that would show us maybe the Western Hemisphere as well.
Or any like really circular region of the Earth, right? I mean, of course, less than 180 degrees.
But essentially, you can take any hemisphere you want.
And show a great deal of it. Because if you took a mnemonic projection that showed the entire Western Hemisphere, for example, it would just have all the edges would be there, and they would basically go towards the center like straight lines. All the information would be at a infinitely small point at the center of the map. And then you have retroazimuthal, which maintains azimuthal angles. An azimuthal angle is like if you look north on a map and you go like, let's say you go like 45 degrees west of there, so northwest. Northwest is an azimuthal angle. And there's a couple of examples of these. There's a litro. It's only retroazimuthal conformal map. And it's very distorted and conformal, obviously, meaning, like we said, maintaining angles. And then we have the hammer retroazimuthal projection, which distances are preserved.
And also, I just want to add, I love the hammer retroazimuthal projection because what it projects the Earth onto is, so you take a disc, right? And you'll notice that there's two holes punched into this disc. There's actually a very technical name that we have in topology for this type of shape, and it's called the pair of pants. This map projection is a pair of pants.
So the hammer retroazimuthal projection is a pair of pants? They're hammer pants?
So lastly, we'll talk about compromise projections, and all these are projections that will take maybe some of the properties of each of these types of projections we've mentioned above and use them in order to reduce the overall error and make the map look, hopefully, less distorted.
Yeah, and this is basically just for humans, right? Specifically just for human eyes. It's not useful for example, navigation or anything like that, but it's good for, like, for example, the Robinson projection, I believe, is the one used on the cover of National Geographic.
So mathematically, they might not be the most sound, but they look the best.
Oh, yeah, they really do. I mean, and then you have, for example, like the Robinson looks pretty good. It preserves area relatively well. The Soviets had a version of this, the Kavryaysky of 7 projection, which not surprisingly did make Russia look a little bit bigger. But isn't that just the nature of countries? And then you have the Dymaxion, which is where the Earth is projected outward onto an icosahedron, a 20-sided die, basically.
And that's the coolest projection.
Before we go on, and please bear with us, we're just going to talk about a couple of terms that we will be using in the next few sections. So a meridian is a line going from pole to pole. So constant longitude, varying latitude, right?
Exactly. It's pretty straightforward. Yeah. A nautical mile is what we define as 1/60th of a degree along the equator.
Yeah, and it's about 15% longer than a normal mile. And as you could guess, it's 1 arc minute because, you know, an arc minute is 1/60th of a degree and an arc second is 1/60th of an arc minute. And an arc minute along the equator is about 100 feet.
And azimuth is the angle on a sphere, essentially. So let's say that you are standing on a sphere, then whatever the angle that you're looking at something at with respect to true north would be the azimuth.
Oh, yeah. And then you have rumb lines. Whereas a great circle is like the shortest distance between two points on a globe, if you keep going in with that heading, you'll come back to the same point, right? It's like a rubber band around the Earth at the tightest it can be. So the difference between a rumb line nearer to the equator is much closer to the shortest distance, but it becomes less and less accurate the closer you go to the poles. In fact, if you go northwest constantly starting at the equator, you'll end up going in a spiral that never stops and just running around the North Pole. And it is a straight line on the Mercator map. And those were some of the terms we wanted to familiarize y'all with. So the Mercator map was designed by Gerardus Mercator. His original name was Geert or Gerhard de Kramer. He grew up in a poor family, which is why his early name wasn't known very well. The reason why he changed his name to Gerardus Mercator is because people used to Latinize their names all the time. So, for example, René Descartes went by Renatus Cartesius. And he was born in Flanders, located in modern-day Belgium, in 1512. And like we said, he was a son of a cobbler, graduated from the University of Louvain in 1532. He made a name for himself because he was really good at maps. He published several maps of places around the world, including an early version of world map, which is a heart-shaped projection. In 1544, though, Mercator was arrested under suspicion of heresy because of all the traveling he did. He was a little bit sympathetic to the Lutherans. After spending a few months in prison, he was released and continued his studies. But he moved to Duisburg in the Holy Roman Empire. But his first map, the first Mercator map, was published in 1569. And it's remarkable because even then, it wasn't meant to be a general map for just display. It was meant for navigation only. He recognized how incredibly distorted everything was, but he did it because rumb lines are easy to travel along. And he coined the term atlas, actually, for a collection of maps based on the Greek.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
Figure. But he died in 1594, a year before his atlas was published. He was still publishing parts of his atlas. And it's kind of interesting. It was definitely a product of its time. It had a lot of descriptions of biblical creation and history. So his table of chronology was about 400 pages long, where he fixed the dates of some earthly dynasties, major political and military events, volcanic eruptions, earthquakes, and eclipses. And the reason why it was so he was one of the earliest people is he was born only 72 years after the printing press. Do you want to talk about how the Mercator projection is derived?
One of the cool things about the Mercator projection is that it is a cylindrical projection. So you can kind of think of it by projecting the Earth onto a cylinder and then unraveling that cylinder into a rectangle. So the analogy that we came up with is that imagine we have a transparent globe and say the countries are drawn on it, and then we wrap a cylinder around it. And let's say that we just have a light bulb in the middle of the globe. So what we'll do is that we'll trace the shapes that this light makes on the cylinder.
Yeah, the shadows cast through the squiggles that draw the countries, right?
Exactly.
And you might notice that this map, so you might wonder, like, what's the catch? Because the cylinder would have to be infinitely tall, right, to contain all the world, right?
Yeah, so what is the catch?
Well, the catch is just like many other maps, you can't put all the world on it. That's just the whole thing.
Oh.
But Antarctica would have infinite apparent area in a perfect Mercator map, which would be infinitely tall and finitely wide.
That's where we run into trouble then, is that the North Pole would be infinity up and the South Pole would be infinity down. So how do we remedy this?
We remedy this by just using, if we're using the Mercator map as it should be used for navigation. And of course, people did used to navigate around the Arctic, and they just used a different set of maps for navigating around the Arctic. They actually used a different projection because of the way that it worked with compasses. And it's cool because it preserves angles, right?
Right, so what that means is that the shapes of all of our countries or borders or continents or whatever are going to look the same, even if the areas maybe aren't.
Yeah, at least locally, right? Because, like for example, if we trace a blob that contains, you know, the United States and Africa, Africa on the Mercator map is relatively small because of distortion, but the United States is large, and that would have a different shape, obviously, right, than it would on if you took a piece of the globe and flattened out as little as you could. But, of course, that gets into other stuff.
And to add on to that, even on the same continent, let's say that we have United States and Canada. Canada itself, even though it's connected to the United States, is going to be distorted a little bit more than the United States would because it's further up north. And that's another property, is that distortion is also going to be continuous.
And a way to see these is there's these things called Tissot's indicatrices. And what they are is these little circles that show how distorted maps are. Basically, the more distorted stuff is locally, the more stretched out the circles would be. And if an area is larger than another one, the area of the Tissot's indicatrix will be larger. They're pretty cool. I would Google them now if you would like to see what they look like. There's some examples of the distortions that this causes. So if we normalize the globe around... where there's the less distortion, you know, near the equator. The United States of America is 23% smaller, right, than it appears on the map, which means that it's 30% larger than it should be, right?
Yeah, or Norway in this case is 57.3 smaller than it appears on the Mercator.
Which means that it's over twice as big as it should be, 2.34 times as big. China is 25% bigger than it should be.
And then Greenland is almost four times as big as it should be.
Yeah, versus Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, and Nigeria, and Ecuador are all about the same size as they should be, right?
Right, less than 1% smaller than their actual sizes.
So these distortions are controversial because they're used as a learning tool without telling people that it was a navigation tool. I mean, there's projections that have existed for many, many years that aim to represent a globe as it more looks to our minds. I mean, there's equal area maps and things like that, like we've talked about. But if you take the Mercator map and you take the United States and you kind of rotate it into Africa, it looks like it's the same size. If you actually did that on the world, like let's say we took the United States and lifted up by helicopters and moved it over Africa and we mapped it out on a Mercator projection the whole time, you would see the United States shrink down to the size of about Western kind of Central Africa.
Yeah, and so I'm looking this up right now, just going across either of those continents. So, Miami, Florida to Seattle, Washington, for example, in order to drive that entire distance, you would have to go 3,305 miles or 5,318 kilometers from Miami to Seattle. Whereas if you're in Africa and you want to go from Cape Town, South Africa to Tunis, Tunisia, you would have to go 6,872 miles or 10,914 kilometers, which is more than twice the distance, notwithstanding the fact that from Miami to Seattle, we're going southeast to northwest, whereas Cape Town to Tunis, we're going mostly directly north.
If you look at the area of Africa, it's about, you could fit the United States, Western and Eastern Europe, Spain and Portugal, Japan and China into Africa.
Yeah, Africa is kind of incomprehensibly huge.
Oh yeah, and this is just one big landmass. Of course, the map wasn't created, you know, with the purpose of making European and economically advantaged countries look large. It's just a coincidence. However, the fact that we continue to use this map, especially without context, when you're a child, you look at area really as a sign of how big something is, obviously, and you don't have an understanding that the map projection is distorting things near the poles. I mean, when I was a kid, I thought that Antarctica was massive.
Yeah, Antarctica, and this is just a consequence of... So, if you're mapping, generally, a sphere onto a cylindrical region, then you have one point on the sphere for the South Pole, but that makes up an entire circle on that cylinder, effectively.
Yeah,
so that's
exactly
kind of why Antarctica looks so huge.
Yeah, so, it just makes this thing look incomprehensibly huge. And I thought Greenland was like this massive place. It's like, no wonder they need dog sleds. But yeah, so it's we have projections that are better. We have for a very long time. Robinson projection is used, I believe, by National Geographic. Might be used by the CIA World Factbook as well.
And so the Robinson is actually an example of a projection that is neither equal area nor conformal. So it actually is one of those compromise projections that we mentioned.
Yeah, actually, I think it's useful to expose people to all kinds of different maps. I mean, it's an interesting subject. We live on this world, you know?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised just how much more there is to this than what I imagined going into it. Like, it seems like a fairly simple subject, but yet people have found just so many different ways to do this. one seemingly basic thing is drawing our planet.
Okay, now we're going to talk about sinusoidal projection, which is significant because it was the first equal area map. It was first used in a map by Jean Cousin of Dieppe in a 1570 map. And we actually have a formula for this. And it's the x-coordinate on the map that you're making is theta minus theta naught. Theta, like we said, being the longitude, which goes from 0 to 2 pi or 0 to 360, whichever, if you're using radians or degrees, times cosine of phi, phi being the latitude, so how far up you are on the sphere, with respect to the poles. And your y-coordinate is just phi. You just literally map latitude 1 to 1 with height, you know?
Yes, and what I think is actually interesting about this projection is the fact that there is a function of latitude in the x-coordinate. And what I imagine this being is, so let's say we start at the equator. So phi is 0, so cosine of phi in this case is just going to be 1. So there's going to be no change in how we display our x-coordinate there. But let's say that we go further up north. What's going to happen is that the circle for all points of the same latitude is going to be smaller than it would at the equator. So to compensate for that, we take cosine of phi instead of just projecting it right onto a cylinder, because if we take a smaller circle of the same latitude and project it onto a sphere, then it's going to be enlarged. So this compensates for that.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, a really easy way to really visualize what this is doing is imagine you have a globe, right? Like made out of paper or plastic or something like that. And you slice it from North Pole to South Pole. And then you slice ribbons of it so that it kind of looks like a rib cage, you know? You slice it along lines of latitude everywhere but the opposite side. So you just basically have these cuts radiating out from a center. If you flatten it out and redraw it, you'll get this map.
And what you'll notice as well is that this projection, if you look it up, doesn't really look like a rectangle, but like you would expect a lot of maps to look like. It's more of like a Vidalia onion as well. And that's just a consequence of the projection formula itself. And so that cosine function of our latitude is what really makes the shapes distorted here. And that's what gives us, I would say, our sort of onion looking shape. Because you'll notice that the north and south poles here are a single point.
Yeah, like if you cut a Vidalia onion down the medial axis.
I didn't know there's a name for the axis of a fruit.
Not for a fruit, but I looked up anatomy terms for jellyfish.
So the next projection that I want to mention is the Dymaxion, and I'm going to bring up XKCD again for this one, because I love their description of the Dymaxion map. And this is from XKCD 977, Map Projections, You Like Isaac Asimov, XML, and Shoes with Toes. You'd think the Segway got a bad rap. Your own 3D goggles, which you use to view rotating models of better 3D goggles. You type in Dvorak. And that's the thing about Dymaxion, is that it is a bit of one of those quirky, sort of unusual map projections. And yet, it's also a pretty good compromise projection, I would say. And the idea here is that we just take an icosahedron, wrap it around the Earth, and project outwards from the Earth onto the icosahedron.
Yeah, which is kind of cool because it's orientation free, right?
Yeah, and so once you've done that, you just unwrap the faces of the icosahedron and just lay them out onto a flat plane, and you have something that mostly works, and I would say comes close to pleasing everyone, if not for the fact that it's a little oddly shaped.
And an icosahedron, obviously a 20-sided die. So if you imagine covering a 20-sided die in ink and putting it on paper and kind of rolling it around so that you touch every number once, that's the shape of the Dymaxion map. The Dymaxion map was actually created by Buckminster Fuller, which is, I think, kind of interesting, known for geodesic domes.
Hmm.
And there's also the Waterman butterfly. Can you read the XKCD description for people who like the Waterman butterfly?
Oh, yep, it's on there too. So this one is, really? You know the Waterman? Have you seen the 1909 Cahill map that's based? You have a framed reproduction at home? Whoa, listen, forget those questions. Are you doing anything tonight?
And which is poking fun at two things. One, the author's poking fun at himself. And two, people really get religious about which map projection they like. I'm not totally religious about it, but I really like the Dymaxion map. Like, it's my favorite by far. I really like it. And it, one of the cool features about it, and it's one of my favorite things about it, is that it shows the world as one mostly contiguous landmass connected at the Arctic, because there really is quite a bit of land up there. And it really makes it, it really shows... you know, the shape of the continents, almost like a spread out Pangaea.
And like even the author of XKCD has his favorite map projection, I have mine as well. I would say that mine is the Pierce Quincuncial projection. And the reason for this is that, so if you kind of take a look at it, it's a square shaped projection. And you'll notice Antarctica is in four pieces here. And so what's going on is that this kind of references what the fundamental group of a sphere looks like, in that if you try to flatten a sphere out onto two pieces of paper, then how you stretch and warp around that piece of paper such that it looks like a sphere again is you would start by taking a corner and gluing those two pieces together, and taking the other corner and gluing those pieces together. And so what happens is when you do that, Antarctica kind of becomes together as one point again. And I just think that's really cool. And as a topologist at heart, this map just speaks to me.
Honestly, you might have sold me a little bit on the Pierce Quincuncial. Like, I might have had my mind changed, but I really still like that about Dymaxion. But yeah, that is fascinating. Yeah, from a topological standpoint, wow. So we talked on, I believe, even was it the last podcast about Donut World? What do you call it? Donut Land? Something like that?
Donut Land. Yeah.
So how could we map Donut Land?
So Donut Land is a lot easier in some ways and maybe not as easy in any way. So like a sphere, a torus, or a donut, as we call it informally, is a two-dimensional manifold. So you can use two coordinates to represent it. It just might not be phi and theta or latitude and longitude like we do here. An easier way to do it would be you have an angle for where it is along the whole donut, and then an angle for what circle around the donut it is after that.
Yeah, so if, like if you put the donut on a clock, the hands could point to the first angle, and if you sliced the donut, like a little slice of the donut, so that it's a little circle, and you took the angle there, that'd be your second one, right?
So it could work in this case, like we usually use negative 90 to positive 90 for our latitude. So we could use 0 to 360 as our latitude as well, because there are two sides then, is because there's not just the outside of the donut. It doesn't just wrap around itself again, but there also is a whole inside half of the donut as well. So we don't so we can't just use 180. We really should use 360 there. So, formula-wise, what I would actually say about this is that it's very easy then, and very reasonable, to just have a projection on the donut that's x equals theta and y equals phi.
So, Donut Land has it really easy with maps. I mean, although the map wouldn't be equal area, but so there would still be probably weird map wars, but everybody would probably suffocate before they were over because of all the atmosphere being flung away from the planet rotating so quickly to be have a donut shape.
Right. As it turns out, having a planet be a torus shape requires it to spin fast enough that it maintains that hole in the center, which means that it would shed off its atmosphere, unfortunately. So that might do away with my evil plans of making the Earth spin hundreds, if not thousands, of times faster, just so that we can have a single, consolidated map of the planet.
So now we're going to talk about Gaulpeters. The absolute Gaul, right?
The absolute Gaul.
Gaulpeters, so we got to talk about Lambert cylindrical equal area projection, which is pretty simple. It's just projecting a sphere directly outward onto a... cylinder, which just maintains the area, because a slice of a cylinder has the same area as the slice of the globe that it corresponds to, which is actually used in Archimedes' proof of the surface area of a sphere and the volume of a sphere. But we'll talk about that on some other podcast. It was invented by the Swiss mathematician Johann Heinrich Lambert. And is described in a 1772 treatise, which I just kind of like the name of it. It's really long. Beträge zum Gebrauche der Mathematik und deren Anwendung, Part 3, Section 6. Anmerkungen und Zutische zur Entwerfung der Land- und Himmelscharten. Which is just the longest name ever, but it's just translated as Notes and Comments on the Composition of Terrestrial and Celestial Maps. And I just love those 18th century German treatises where half the treatise is in the title. But basically, this has a thing on it called a standard parallel that can be shown mathematically. Basically, along the equator, there's no distortion, but there's distortion at the poles. It was modified by clergyman James Gall in 1855 to have standard parallels at 45 degrees. We'll talk about that in a second. Standard parallels, of course, like we said, show less distortion.
So, and then in 1967, a German filmmaker by the name of Arno Peters also managed to come up with a map projection that happened to be identical to Gall's orthographic projection. And then he presented it in 1973 as a new invention.
Yeah, it was, and the main difference was that it was stretched out vertically. All right, so the original formula was x equals r pi lambda cosine 45 degrees all over 180 degrees, which is kind of baffling because degrees aren't usually used like that. But theta divided by 180 is really what it means.
Right, because then, theta here is in degrees.
Yeah, and y equals r sine of phi divided by cosine of 45 degrees, which is like, why put the cosine there?
Right, because cosine and sine of 45 degrees can be both written as 1 over the square root of 2. So we can rewrite this as x equals r pi lambda over 180 degrees square root of 2, and y as r square root of 2 sine phi. But this is also still a little messy. We can really just simplify this down to x equals r theta and y equals 2r sine of phi, where we're just dividing out all the constants there. And even then, we don't really necessarily need to worry about r, because that's just the radius of the Earth.
Yeah, so it's a pretty simple projection, but it was really the way in which it was delivered, right, that was the most misguided?
Yeah, and I'd say the problem there is that Gall Peters claims to be the area-correct map.
Which is false, because one of the first map projections ever, the sinusoidal projection from 1570, maintained equal area. And there have been many maps since that maintained area, including the one that he just ripped off of, which itself was just a modification of an earlier map. And what's funny about it, too, is that it claims to be culturally neutral as possible. Peter said one map for one world. But the difference between this and the most basic equal area map, you know, the Lambert cylindrical equal area map, is that it doesn't distort anything along the 45th parallels. And those run through European countries and the United States. And it's honestly has the same problem. I mean, it makes Africa look like it's big and stretched out. It has the right area, but it doesn't maintain any of the fidelity of the shapes in that part, which isn't a problem per se, but it's the fact that he claimed that it was some culturally neutral thing, and he based it off of a English clergyman's work from 1855, which didn't distort along the 45th parallels. And cartographers were exasperated at his claims. I mean, The good Homolocene projection looks like an unwrapped orange. It maintains size. It was created by John Paul Good. There's Armadillo projection by Edwin Rice, which is better.
And yet, Peters maintained that there should be one map for one world, which, personally, I disagree with. I actually enjoy the fact that there are so many different map projections. It gave us an entire podcast episode to talk about them.
Oh, yeah, and they all have their uses, and
Fun little quirks.
And, I mean, what does XKCD have to say about Gall Peters from that comic?
XKCD on Gall Peters says, I hate you.
We live on the surface of a sphere falling through space. It's only natural that the surface would be of great interest to us, both on an emotional level and a practical one, because resources are distributed on the surface. We are also the creature known for representing information on surfaces, is one of the things that makes us human. That is, painting, writing, and makeup. This is, of course, the most efficient way to get data into our eyes, which see a 2D representation of our world, projected onto our retinas. It's, therefore, also natural that we would represent the surface in two dimensions. Two spheres, however, happen to be very topologically interesting objects, especially when it comes to representing them on a plane. These conditions set the stage for a world with an immense variety of maps, each for a different purpose. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Meryl.
And this has been Breaking Math. You can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/breakingmath. You can also support us directly on anchor.fm. There's a donate button on that. And if you want a poster, facebook.com/breakingmathpodcast. Meryl, do you have any concluding remarks?
I'm trying to think of something witty. I think that pretty much covers it. And we all know how relevant covers are in the field of topology. That was bad, but I'll keep it.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.